Good morning. Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. My name is Ann Gardner, Justice Ann Gardner, and to my right is Justice Sue Walker, and to my left is Justice Bob McCoy. We're your panel for this morning, and we look forward to hearing from you. I'm going to ask Deborah to call the first case.
May it please the court.
Mr. Michelle.
Good morning, Your Honor. Good morning. Myself, Thomas Michelle, along with Mr. Ed Cox, represent the appellant Destructors, Inc. today in this appeal. And what I'd like to do, this case presents, I think, a lot of complicated topics today, and I'm going to try to focus on two this morning. One is going to be civil court jurisdiction to hear this case, and the second one will be whether the ordinance involved conflicts with state law. By way of brief background, I know the court is familiar with this case, is Destructors owns and operates or leases a plant in wholly within Fort Worth, and it is properly zoned in the city of Fort Worth for medium industrial. Destructors receives used concrete from the governmental entities such as Fort Worth, Tarrant County, other states, then crushes, then resells to other governments, and essentially recycles that material for use.
Is this a case of I moved by the airport and now I'm complaining about the noise?
No, I don't think so. This is a case of a lot of money, a lot of time, and a lot of effort of getting this property situated, working with the city of Fort Worth, having it properly zoned.
While these ordinances were still in place that your trucks have to run over?
The ordinances were in place. However, in 1989, the state of Texas came in and issued a statewide uniform permitting system. And that's why that plan was undertaken, because of the statewide permitting plans. It wasn't, we're just going to ignore that ordinance. I don't think it's uncontested before the court about the situation that is presented to Destructors being essentially landlocked, not being able to get its trucks there. They're not Destructors' trucks. They're independent contractors. They come from the governmental entity where their concrete is crushed and used, try to deliver it to our site. That is what I think gives rise to what I think are two there are other issues, obviously other legal issues involved, but two of the big ones are civil court jurisdiction to hear the challenge to a criminal statute. The leading case, obviously cited, the last major topic spoken by the Texas Supreme Court was this State versus Morales in 1994. One thing is, though, is I think the court has to consider the unique nature of the facts in this case. This is really the law school hypothetical, where a lot of times the courts can get away distinguishing certain set of facts as, they can sidestep it one way or another. But as in Morales, and I think it's important to look at the facts in Morales and the context of which Morales was decided. Morales was a challenge by individuals to conduct regulating homosexual activity. There was no threat in prosecution. It felt that it stigmatized them, and they were just these citizens of the state of Texas that felt that law needed to go, and they went into state court to challenge that law. Unique to this case is we are amazingly affected directly by this ordinance. We're not some citizen out there that wants to challenge a random ordinance out there. We are landlocked within Anglin Drive, which is within the city of Forest Hill. We cannot get any of those trucks to our property, and so it's directly affecting our business. Morales states, what is the normal way that parties challenge criminal statutes? You go out, you violate it, and then you challenge it in criminal court. Destructors can't do that. They're not our trucks. We have no ability to do that. And I know we cited a case from the late 1800s Texas Supreme Court and some cases after that citing those courts, but that's what courts of equity are designed to do. Or to address these situations where there's no other remedy available. In contrast, Morales went at great lengths.
Why is the remedy not the trucks only carry 72,000 pounds?
That's outside our control. Those trucks come to us, loaded. That's the simple answer. With regard to Morales, it went at great lengths to distinguish the Pellez case in a chance to, which it said it was okay in that situation to challenge the statute, but not in Morales. And I think sometimes the facts and the standing of the particular people are what are critical to those distinctions. With regard to our situation here, the challenge in equity is we have no relief by criminal courts. Our civil court jurisdiction has set up this analysis. Then Morales goes through this basically where four scenarios can give rise to where a civil court may have jurisdiction. It seemed to say that the Pellez case came within the third category, whereas the Passel case came under the third scenario, and Morales came under the fourth scenario. I've looked long and hard, and I've read those cases. The best thing I can come up with why Passel was a valid challenge is the parties were particularly affected in Passel, whereas in Morales they weren't particularly affected. And the Supreme Court in Morales said, and this will get to other issues related, as to whether a vested property right has to be used or not used involved in this case. And there's a lot of briefing on whether we have a vested property right or whether we have a personal right. But I want to step before we get to that and say under Passel and under Morales, they acknowledged that personal property rights can be in jeopardy. And I think that's the situation that we have. It's closer in Passel than we are in Morales. And we've cited the Dobbs case. Yes, it's a 1959 Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals case, but it's about the closest factual situation we could come to find out our particular situation of being this business entity being affected by an ordinance that then cuts off the customers, and it leaves the customers to literally have to go and challenge the ordinance as being criminal. In the same situation as we have, we're unable to challenge the ordinance in any other fashion. So I think when you look at the composite of it and what the courts, none of them fit really squarely, but so you have to look at them and kind of try to feel out which one we think best applies. And if you look at the overall structure of Morales, and Morales, I thought, I believe it was Justice Cornyn, struggled to try to distinguish this case from Passel, and that's why I quoted those in the reply brief at length. But if you look at Gamage's dissent, it's a really good articulation of a lot of the history of the law on this, relating, starting with the City of Austin case from 1894, bringing it forward and what the policies were and what they were trying to achieve. And the overall, and I think if the court steps back and looks and saying, well, I think the fundamental policy that is espoused by this doctrine is you don't want challenges to criminal statutes coming into overflow into civil courts. So if you look at that overall policy and work through the cases a little bit, you divine a little bit that without any other remedy, I think one of the fundamental basis of equity courts is to allow a litigant to come in and challenge it in a situation that they otherwise couldn't do it. I mean, I think it's that simple. And then you work through the particular test that Morales sets up, and I think civil court jurisdiction lies in this case.
Could you address the argument that you have vested rights?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. No, it's we briefed it very much on both sides. We've cited a series of cases. Number one, the cases they cite about this, in the number one case they largely cite is the Brasky case, is about a vested property right is our zoning cases. They talk about you don't have a vested property right to operate the dog kennel in violation of a city zoning ordinance. Well, that's not our case here. We are properly zoned. We're not challenging a zoning ordinance. So I think those cases are distinguishable on that fact. Secondly, what we have, it's somewhat closer to the Dobbs case, is we have vested property rights. We do have a lease. We have large amount of equipment on the recycling plant, millions of dollars. We have the actual concrete and the personal property that we own, and we've cited cases to that effect that we say can tend to give us a vested property right. If the court takes the, and I think there's a spectrum on it on these cases that we've looked at, if the court takes the city's approach that the narrowest interpretation of a vested property is just literally, can you own that property or not own that property? I mean, it's an extremely narrow interpretation. We have tried to shed some light on what we think the vested property right is. We've cited state law. Obviously, a leasehold is a vested, and I think sometimes there's some problems with the terminology of vested, what vested means under a property right, and whether vested means under a constitutional analysis. I don't know that there's been a real clear articulation about vested property rights in the civil jurisdiction district. You've got a lot of overlapping of various concepts. You've got constitutional vested property, you've got state law vested property right cases, and then you've got this state court distinction between our bifurcated system of state courts and civil courts. So,
well, isn't there also a timing issue as to when the right would vest? Like, wouldn't it have to have vested prior to the ordinance being enacted or being made applicable to your trucks?
No, I don't think so. I think the timing issues sometimes come into the ordinance questions. I think that's right. If you go to a piece of property and it's zoned residential and you want to make it industrial, I think that timing comes to place. And that's the cases they cite is the timing issue on zoning cases. Because then you go in and say, hey, you're taking my property away because you won't change my zoning, versus going to a particular, the timing issues and the tests that have involved typically deal with, you go to a particular place that is zoned as you want it to be zoned, and then the city changes it. So I think that those are the timing issues there. Yeah. And I know these issues sometimes tie together. And so getting to the state preemption or state, the ordinance being inconsistent with the law goes somewhat to the timing issue, I think, because this whole endeavor was taken with this understanding of having a statewide uniform permitting system across this state. Significant requirements, getting bonded. You have to pick the counties that you pay. That money comes in. The money then goes somewhat paid back to counties that are designated that you're going to travel to. I know the court is aware. We've cited extensively to the AG's opinion. The thing that's useful about the AG, I know it's not binding on the court, but it is. It does provide the court with some good background as to the implementation of this statewide statute.
Well, now you try to analogize the fact that in this Attorney General's opinion, somebody wanted an extra permit to this situation, which has nothing to do with an extra permit. I mean, I can't imagine that being taken your theory to its logical conclusion, you could get a permit to haul hazardous material, and if it happens to that your facility is in the middle of a residential neighborhood, the city can't prohibit the hazardous material from going through the residential neighborhood based on, well, it's a statewide permit to do it, so you can't do anything about it.
Well,
it can't be.
I seriously don't think that is the I don't think that's a close analogy to the facts we have in this case. If you're getting into a hazardous material, those are regulated by hazardous material laws. That would fall under a different umbrella and perhaps a different regulation. This is simply transporting and weight regulations. They're not saying you can't bring a hazardous material into it. In fact, we're not even going. We just have to go through the city of Forest Hill. And it's undisputed we're not taking any hazardous material. And if there was a hazardous material law, hopefully it would be addressed by the state to protect statewide citizens. And you wouldn't be left to municipalities to regulate hazardous material. But if it was, I wouldn't see an issue with the regulation of hazardous materials. That's different than passing through a non-hazardous material.
Well, the city says there's a difference between the county's ability to operate under the permit statute and the municipalities, specifically home rule cities. How do you answer that?
Absolutely, and I know I'm running out of time. Real quickly, we try to set up the statutory scheme work, and yes, we cannot find an absolute express prohibition that says cities cannot regulate. But what we have shown is a comprehensive statewide permitting system with bonding and licensings and permits and a regulatory system. I do take issue, though, that a city, the municipality has carte blanche to do it. The state did come in and say under 303 that the municipalities can do regulate these trucks in two situations. None that apply to our case. And that's why there's a little discussion between whether municipalities or counties have greater or less. Under the statutory scheme where counties have greater regulatory authority, our position is the municipalities have less. And what you have to look at is the test by Brookside is whether the ordinance is inconsistent with state law. It doesn't have to be entirely preempted. And so there's a statewide system that the state has come in and said to the municipalities, you can regulate trucks of a certain weight of commodities that are reasonably disassembled or the overweight trucks. So none of which applied to our two situations here. And so, and perhaps I can hit this up on some rebuttal, but I think primarily that is a large distinction. The state came into this area, regulated it, and otherwise it's redundant. Construction of statutes, you don't have statutes that are deemed to be redundant. Why did the legislature come in here and list various categories that the city can come in and regulate? You can regulate these various areas. If that was the rule that municipalities can do whatever they want to with regard to overweight trucks, that would be a superfluous provision. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Slayton.
May it please the court. Good morning. I represent the city of Forest Hill in this appeal, filed as a result of a plea to the jurisdiction which the city of Forest Hill successfully asserted in the trial court below. As Mr. Michel outlined, we're dealing with a situation here where a concrete reclamation company has come in to the city of Fort Worth more than 30 years after the city of Forest Hill adopted an ordinance properly exercising its home rule police power over roadways. And now, even though the destructor's company has come to the alleged nuisance, we're now trying to challenge the law of the adjacent municipality, trying to bust the police power of that city wide open. But there is no standing in order to do so. There is no jurisdiction conferred on the trial court below because of the lack of standing. Because, as Mr. Michel was addressing, and I'll elaborate on, the trial court has no authority to review this criminal matter, which should have been taken up in the criminal court if it had been properly prosecuted. But here again, because there's not standing, that's not the issue. And ultimately, even had there been standing or jurisdiction at the trial court level, the preemption issue fails because of the city of Forest Hill's home rule authority. Turning first to follow the order.
Does it bother you that it's okay for trucks to run intra-city hauling rocks all over the place, but if somebody happens to come from outside the city, that's verboten?
Well, I don't think under the ordinance that it is forbidden as long as you stay on the truck routes. It is forbidden under the ordinance for
these. I thought you could bring it intra-city or into the city if your destination was in the city. It's just you can't travel through the city, which is what they're doing.
You can bring it into the city if there's no other way to do so by the truck routes.
Okay.
That's the lesser preferred or the alternative method. The first method that is ordered by the ordinance is that you have to use the truck routes. If you can't get into the city by the truck routes, you have to do it the other way through the least intrusive method possible, and those drivers must carry proof of their destination so you don't have random drivers coming into the city. We can't prohibit commerce into the city. By the same token,
but you can prohibit commerce through the city?
It's not prohibiting commerce. It's protecting the city's investment, protecting the city streets, which weren't engineered for 80,000-pound trucks.
But what
it's
about
protecting
the trucks coming into the city?
Well,
with the 80-pound trucks and the city's roads and
on a limited basis, only if they have these particular permits and have bonded, have obtained the bonds as well, which protects the taxpayers' investment.
No, excuse me. This is interruption of your subject matter a bit, but I have a question about whether there was a permit that has been mentioned in the briefs that was applied for and denied to destructors, applied for by destructors. Was there or not?
a different type of permit, Your Honor. Under the ordinance that we're talking about regulating the through trucks, there's a specific permit scheme there. Destructors did not apply for a permit to operate the trucks on that roadway. Destructors did try to apply for a special use permit, which is allowed through the city's zoning ordinances and that type thing, to essentially get the city to agree not to enforce this law against Destructors' customers. But they're two very different administrative schemes. So the permit that we discussed extensively on both sides in the briefing that you have to obtain to carry those heavyweights through the city is not the permit for which Destructors implied. That was a completely separate process.
But couldn't apply for it because the trucks didn't belong to them, correct?
That's right. That's right. But they did have other options, Your Honor. They had options regarding where to locate their facilities. They researched, apparently thoroughly, what was necessary to operate in that area, going through an extensive TCEQ permitting process, yet they wholly ignored, or maybe didn't inform themselves about, I don't know, the laws of the city of Forest Hill governing its residential roadway that leads to those streets. I mean, there are other options here from a policy standpoint, potentially building a roadway or connecting somewhere else, locating somewhere else, bringing in 72,000-pound max trucks as opposed to 80,000-pound trucks, going to the issue of whether or not they have a vested right in this property. There are other options. The city's not keeping destructors from using their property. And there are other options for the use of this property besides a concrete reclamation center. The cases are abundant, stating that you have no vested right to use your property for a particular purpose. And they are not all zoning cases, as asserted by destructors, even though destructors is trying to rely on the fact that they're within the city of Fort Worth's zoning to assert this vested property right. One of the cases asserted by destructors in their reply brief